I'm Daniel Levine, and this is the Bio Report. New York City is not the first place that comes to mind when thinking of biotech clusters, but the Big Apple has been a growing center of biomedical innovation with its mix of academic research hospitals, finance, and growing number of biopharmaceutical companies. One place that's seeking to serve as both a home to innovative companies and facilitate collaborations is Cure, which describes itself as a healthcare innovation campus. We spoke to Seema Kumar, CEO of Cure, about how it operates, its various initiatives, and what can be done to accelerate the movement of innovative technologies from the lab to the marketplace. Seema, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
We're going to talk about innovation, collaboration, and Cure. Cure is located in Manhattan, about 10 blocks north of Union Square. It bills itself as an innovation campus. Can you explain what Cure is and what its goals are?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, Danny, it is an innovation campus, and we call ourselves an innovation campus because we think of ourselves as a place that people who want to learn and make a difference and grow professionally and do things to change the world in the realm of healthcare find this to be a go-to destination. And what we are now is a 350,000 square foot facility. We have wet labs, dry labs, a conference center, an event space, a collaboration residency. And just to give you a sense of what, when I talk about wet labs, you know, what kind of labs we're talking about. For example, we have a floor that's fully dedicated to gene therapy. There's a company, an established company called Lexeo. It's a clinical stage company, a public company that's working on using gene therapy to solve cardiovascular diseases and Alzheimer's. That's an example of a company that's here. Another company is on the ground floor, on the street level. It's called Wandercraft, and Wandercraft makes exoskeletons. It's a French robotics company that is now just, you know, made Cure its headquarters in the U.S. market. And what it does is it rehabilitates wheelchair-bound patients and allows them to walk again. And then there is a collaboration residency where we have small companies that are working on using AI to accelerate drug discovery and find a new advances and cures for many different diseases. We also have NYU that's going to be occupying two floors. And we have what's called the Lab of the Future. And that floor is all about really using AI and automation to design de novo drugs to solve many of the world's big healthcare problems. And then last thing I'll say is in the conference center and in the event space and in our rooftop, what we do is we bring together, we convene the who's who in healthcare, and our audience gets to hear about what the future opportunities are in healthcare. And entrepreneurs get to learn how to take an idea and start a company and go to market. So that's why we call ourselves a campus. It's interdisciplinary, multi-sectorial, multi-disciplines, but all focused on making a difference in healthcare.
Cure is an affiliate of Deerfield. What's Deerfield's involvement with Cure, and what's its interest?
We are two separate companies. Deerfield is a private equity firm. It's the largest investor in healthcare. And their mandate is to actually find the latest transformational things that are happening in healthcare. They form companies and they invest in companies that are doing breakthrough, groundbreaking work in the healthcare arena. So it's more of an investment in the healthcare sector. Cure is much more of a ecosystem builder. We do not make any products. We do not invest in companies or products. We are a campus in the sense that we bring people together to really have conversations about the future of healthcare, incubate ideas, make connections, and meet our mission to cure. We either house companies in our building, we incubate companies by giving them the ability to really bring their ideas to market through professional development and education. We convene because we're a neutral convener, bringing academia, industry, government, pharmaceuticals, biotechs, everybody together in the common goals of healthcare. But we are not a non-for-profit. We are a for-profit. We convene events. We create content, we hold conferences, and we launch challenges, innovation challenges, in which we ask people to submit ideas. And when the ideas come through, we offer them a residency in this building so they can enrich the ecosystem. They can learn from those who are in the ecosystem, and the ecosystem can learn from their involvement here with Cure.
If you think about the early regional biotech clusters, New York was late to the party compared to, say, Boston or San Francisco. It certainly is a center of capital and innovative biomedical research. I suspect many people, though, don't realize how New York has grown as a biotech center. How does Cure see its role in terms of economic development and strengthening that cluster in New York?
Yeah, Cure is, I think of Cure as a key connector, a hub, completely squarely in the center of this mission. And in fact, we have collaborations with and support from the Economic Development Corporation of New York in the common goal that we all have to make New York and New York City a health sciences, a life sciences hub. And you're right. I don't know that we were late to the party. I think we have all of the ingredients that Boston has and San Francisco has. Boston tends to be the darling of biotech, and San Francisco and Silicon Valley, the darling of the tech. I think what we here in New York bring is the marriage of biology and tech. And so we, in fact, talk about where we are located as a Silicon Alley of New York. And our goal is to really bring the tech, the biology together. We have everything. We have a big cluster of hospitals here. We have the largest number of Nobel laureates here in the city. Graduate students and programs that graduate out of our local universities probably are either number one or number two. Number two in R&D funding. So we have everything. And we, so I think our goal here is to be the connector and be the part of this ecosystem building. In our building, we actually now have about 21 residents, 21 companies that call Cure home. But the building is only the beginning. We have a lot of we have a digital ecosystem of people who are part of our ecosystem. And those companies that I mentioned who are in the building have raised a total of about $760 million in capital. So our goal is to graduate many more of those kinds of companies that are raising capital, that are going public and making New York a economic development and a life sciences hub. And by the way, Danny, long time ago, I used to work at the Whitehead Institute at MIT, and this was during the heyday of the Human Genome Project. And we had one street, Main Street, and that's where it was a center of action. But if you go now, post-genome project, if you go there now to Kendall Square, obviously what you see there is just like a huge hub of activity that's going on in the arena of biotech. So I think New York has the same ability and promise, and it's happening already. And I can't wait to see what the next 3, 5, 10 years will bring to make New York City stand out, even more than it already is.
CURE has been described as a collaborative ecosystem. What's the opportunity for CURE to foster collaborations between different types of entities as well as across disciplines?
Yeah, I think, if you look at the residents in CURE, you'll automatically see that there is representation from universities and academia, there's representation from biotech, there's representation from medical devices and robotics, as well as from platform companies that are focused on platforms like gene therapies. We also have a non-for-profit called Advancium that's also in this building, focused on really incubating ideas that don't have commercial potential. And we have an investor in the building as well. So if you take all of the various different parts of the ecosystem that you need to take healthcare end-to-end from lab all the way to the bedside to the market, then all of those are represented here in the building. And so that makes us a natural convener. It's not one floor, it's 12 floors and the rooftop, which is what makes up this innovation campus. And so it makes us uniquely positioned to bring people together.
And do people graduate from the space? Is this open to anyone who wants to rent space there?
Yes, it's open. The collaboration residency is open to anybody who wants to rent space here. But it's not just about people who want to rent, right? We want people here who have the common ethos that we see here in this campus, which is to really advance healthcare and be invested in finding cures and making it accessible and equitable for all. So having that ethos, doing something very different from and differentiated from, what everybody else is doing is another thing we look at when we think about the residents in the building. And as I mentioned, the building is only the beginning of the story because you don't have to be a 365-day resident here. You could be a member of CURE and have a place to park when you're coming in from Europe or other parts of the world or West Coast or Boston. And similarly, if you're here in New York City to meet an investor or you want to take advantage of some of our facilities, then you have a place here to call home. So it doesn't have to be that you're a resident in this building. You can be a member of the ecosystem as well.
There's so much that goes on at CURE that I think it might be difficult for people to wrap their heads around it, but I wanted to walk through some of that. You mentioned the event space. One of the things you do is there is an educational component to CURE, and you hold what you call Tuesday talks. These are also streamed online. Can you explain what those are?
Yeah, so Tuesday talks are, we have, we address the topics that are top of mind for people in the arena of healthcare. So whether it is bringing an academic or a biotech or somebody who is a big big leader with a lot of experience in the pharmaceuticals or medical devices industry, we bring people here to give us a little glimpse into what lies in the future, what the opportunities are, what the challenges are. And they are in person as well as streamed online. And mostly we focus on topics that people care about in the arena of healthcare. And they range from, women's health to artificial intelligence, which is really top of mind for a lot of people as to what are the opportunities, what are the challenges, and how do we take that and apply to healthcare, and what does it mean, and how do you have to upskill yourself? That's one example. Another example is genomics and what kinds of opportunities it holds for the future in terms of new drugs and therapies and cures. And sometimes we have topic areas that are more panel oriented. So looking at opportunities, for example, for New York as a city to become even more closely and cohesively joined in this mission to make New York City a hub. That was one of the topic areas that we covered. So it's always focused on what's top of mind for people, but it happens every Tuesday in the evening, in person and online. And we've got quite the following. I was recently, just last week, at Lake Nona, and there were people who came up to me and said, oh, by the way, we follow your Tuesday talks. And even I had not realized how popular these had gotten and how much thirst there is, Danny. There's so much thirst out, you know, in the public to learn more about healthcare and the latest trends in healthcare. Because at the end of the day, let's face it, our health is our number one, priority for all of us. And without that, there is, you know, nothing else. Everything else follows. So people care about that. And I think we're tapping into that to make sure that we're educating people about the latest and the greatest.
You also have two initiatives designed to increase the presence of women in the life sciences, one aimed at board representation, the other seeking to address the gender gap in science and innovation. How significant a problem is this? And what do you think the consequence of not having a greater percentage of women in these roles is?
You know, it's a significant problem. It has been a problem for a very long time. And it's very apropos that we're talking about this because March is Women's History Month. And March 8th, Friday, is International Women's Day. And we've come a long way. Don't get me wrong. So I don't want to be doom and gloom. But still, we still do not have equal representation. We don't have equal opportunities at the leadership positions. Even if you see, equal representation at the more junior levels of an organization, as people get higher and higher in their career, that's when you see the drop off for a whole host of reasons. And it's a moral imperative on the one hand, but it's a business imperative on the other hand. And the business imperative is that if half the population of the world are women and you're not engaging them in creating a future that is good for all of us, then you're actually working with only half the brain, you know, if you're not engaging the other half of your brain, brain trust. So I think in addition to it being the right thing to do, it's also a business imperative to get more women involved in the life sciences. Not just in, them coming into the field, but ensuring that they stay and they don't drop off because they do not have the resources, they do not have the flexible working environment or childcare or, you know, all of the surround sound that it takes for, there to be an environment where women will stay. And then as they get to leadership position, not just retention, but inclusion. And making sure that women are equally included. I think, and board level, as we mentioned, board level representation, leadership level representation is really important. We're not there yet, but on the larger zeitgeist of what we're looking at in the world, women don't want to just be included because they're women. Women want to be included and want to be CEOs and want to be CSOs because they're good and they're bringing value. And that's the reason to include them, not because we don't want tokenism. We don't want to be there because we're women. We want to be there because we're good.
CURE also has a fellowship program. This is the Deerfield Fellows. What is the goal of this initiative?
Well, it's to bring in, diverse and young talent into the healthcare field. And sometimes we have to make that extra effort to ensure that We provide people opportunities to learn and to look at and be, you know, real life experience, hands-on experience to see how business works and healthcare business, different parts of the healthcare business works. And that's what that program is designed to do. And we also have another program called the Exceed Awards, which aims to bring, create more diverse leaders in science and technology and healthcare. And we provide seed money. Every year we launch a search for people from diverse backgrounds who are doing just extraordinary work in their fields. And the award ceremony recognizes them, but they also get money to take their ideas and their research forward.
Finally, I wanted to ask you about one other program you alluded to earlier. This is the Lab of the Future, which is a next generation AI lab that was announced by Deerfield in March and funded with a $25 million grant from New York State and Empire State Development. This is to support early stage drug discovery. What's the vision?
Well, the vision is to really, really revolutionize what molecular biology has to hold. So it's the next industrial revolution in how we do drug discovery. So we using AI and machine learning, you can actually not only speed up drug discovery, but you could also create new molecular entities that are aimed at solving specific problems. So you start with the problem at hand and you say, what kind of medicine would actually we need? And to some degree, you could also take a molecule that has been cast aside because it had too many toxicities, and you can sort of break that down and remodel it so that it becomes less toxic. So it's a lot of different aspects of using AI to really make drug design customized. So you customize and make drugs to meet the need and to solve the disease that you're looking for. And so that's what I think this is all about. And speaking of AI, one of the things that I am really excited about is the innovation challenge we launched, and we announced the winners just 2 weeks ago. So we launched an innovation challenge last year focused on applying AI to solve big problems in healthcare responsibly and equitably. We threw out a call to innovators and entrepreneurs to submit their best ideas. We collaborated with MIT Solve to do this. Got, you know, almost 1,000 queries, and then finally about 110 bona fide ideas and applications, which an external advisory board of really esteemed leaders reviewed, down selected to 20 semifinalists, and then from there down to 10 finalists who pitched their ideas to the advisory board. And then we announced the five winners 2 weeks ago, along with Chelsea Clinton, who was there to help us give out the awards. And one of the winners just last week won, it's called EveryCure. They're now, all of these companies, the winners are going to be given 1 year residency at Cure and a little bit of a grant to get them started. One of the companies, EveryCure, just won last week a big grant from ARPA-H, the government agency that is funding new initiatives in healthcare for, you know, their efforts to repurpose drugs. And it was a close to a $50 million grant that they just won. And so we're happy to welcome them all. They'll be joining the Cure ecosystem. That's an example of the kinds of things where you can really crowdsource great ideas from the next generation of innovators and entrepreneurs who are using the latest technologies to solve problems in healthcare.
We've long seen this convergence of information technology and biotechnology, first with the emergence of digital health, and more recently, this is accelerated with AI moving to the forefront. Where do you see the potential for AI to impact drug development and healthcare more broadly?
I think AI already has been having a big impact on accelerating drug discovery and development. Some of the low-hanging fruit are actually in the healthcare arena with respect to reducing burden for physicians and nurses. The amount of time and effort it takes for physicians and nurses, especially physicians, to write down the notes after meeting every patient and keeping track of all of the various pieces of information about a particular patient. You know, just imagine instead of writing notes and keeping track of the patient's conditions and the medications that they were given and monitoring all of that, if they were to just focus on spending more time with the patient rather than, you know, doing this sort of work. That work, it removes the human burden. I think that's, for example, a great example of how AI can help healthcare. But in the area of drug discovery, what we're seeing is AI being used to eliminate repetitive tasks. For example, gene therapy, one of our other companies that won the award is a company called BioCurie. And what they are doing is using AI and machine learning to kind of eliminate repetitive steps and mistakes that makes gene therapy take much longer, make it much more costlier because you have to account for all the mistakes you make, and to learn from that and really streamline it. So it could make gene therapy, for example, which is now a very costly enterprise, become cheaper, you know, faster, and more accessible. So it's democratizing drug discovery in a way.
You joined Cure as CEO in late 2022, and throughout your career, you've had visibility into the process of scientific innovation and what it takes to move something from the lab to a place where it can have a real impact on human health. I'm not going to recite your resume, but it extends back to key roles with the creation of the Broad Institute and leading communication efforts for the Human Genome Project. You most recently served as the global head in the Office of Innovation and Global Health and Scientific Engagement at Johnson & Johnson, where you oversaw the launch of J-Labs, the company's innovation centers. What have you taken from that and other experience about the challenges entrepreneurs face in translating innovative ideas into commercial products and the best way to accelerate that and improve the chances for success?
Yeah, I see three things. I see, first of all, entrepreneurs have great ideas, but they may not always have the right kind of education, learning, resources on how to take that idea, scale it, create a business plan, get investments, and then, you know, scale it up and launch it in the market. And I think that kind of education you don't often get because you either go into the scientific field and get a scientific education, and the only thing most of the folks know how to make a career as an academic professor, but they may not always learn how to take your science and make it into a company. That's one. Second is in the arena of resources. You may not always know. You may know how to write an NIH grant, but you may not know how to write a pitch deck to go seek an, you know, investment and go how to even find investors. And so I think that kind of information is often lacking. And there is really a big symbiotic relationship here between academia, biotech, and industry. And they all work together because industry can actually take ideas that are coming out of academia and forming into small companies and actually acquire those companies, because that the cost of creating a drug de novo is very, very, very high. Companies are looking for big pharma to actually invest in them. And academics want, when a scientist makes a discovery, the scientist wants that discovery to turn into something that will benefit humanity. And the more people it benefits, the bigger your impact can be on the world. So there isn't anybody connecting the dots across, you know, this entire value chain. And I think what my big learning from all of these various places that I've worked in, I've worked in a hospital, I've worked in the government, I've worked in academia and industry, is that they are all symbiotic. They're all different incarnation of the same end goal. And if we could just work together and not be siloed, it would just make so many more discoveries, create cures for humanity. And that's what Cure aspires to do, is to make those connections.
Seema Kumar, CEO of Cure. Seema, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Danny. Great talking to you.
Thanks for listening. The Bio Report is a production of the Levine Media Group. To automatically download this podcast each week, subscribe to our RSS feed or through iTunes or other podcast manager. To join our mailing list, go to levinemediagroup.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line or are interested in sponsoring this podcast, send email to danny@levinemediagroup.com. Special thanks to Jonah Levine, who composed our theme music, and the Jonah Levine Collective, which performs it.